All right. Now, remember, Agar's kind of a funny guy. He starts off with, "I'm a stupid man." And there's nobody stupider than him, he seems to think. And then he starts rattling off some very wise things. This is... But I think, though, you know, again, as I had said last week, you know, here's a guy who's humbling himself, who just realizes that he's not the smartest cookie on the plate, you know, and that he always has room to learn something. But interesting thing, as I began to study the rest of this chapter, I went back to the word stupid, and actually it's the word stupid in the Hebrew is like animal-like, you know, just... like an ox, you just kind of move on instinct alone or impulse alone, and you just do whatever your flesh tells you to do. You just kind of move along without much sense. But then he begins to say things that make more sense than anything. And so we come up to verse 15, and what we're going to look at are, I'm going to get all the way through the end of this chapter, so you guys don't get me started on anything where I'm just going to keep rolling, okay? I'm going to go all the way to the end because there's a pattern here that he's going to begin, and that is this three things and then the four. And we're going to start with things that are never satisfied. We're going to go to things that are too wonderful to even understand, and then the things that are that perturb or irritate the earth. And then also those things that are exceedingly wise, and then those things that are proud and majestic, as it says, majestic in pace and stately in walk. Now, these are just observations, but through these observations, we can learn so much, or we'll notice so much. You ever have somebody point something out to you, and you knew it all along, but you never thought to look at that? And that's kind of what he's doing here. Starts with, the leech has two daughters, give and give. Let me read through verse 16 and we'll go back and get it. There are three things that are never satisfied. Four never say enough. The grave, the barren womb, the earth that is not satisfied with water, and the fire never says enough. The leech. Some of your Bibles, if you have the old King James, I think it says the horse leech. Now, something, I don't know, I've never seen a horse leech. Leeches are bad enough. Can you imagine one the shape of them, the size of a horse? But also, the commentators, the ancient guys, suggested that this leech actually meant bat, like a vampire bat that sucks blood. The whole point here is that leech is, you know, a blood-sucking creature. And the best translation for the word would have to be leech. If you just look up in the Hebrew, it's just leech, the literal leech, that thing you get in some murky ponds. And do we have leeches in Fort Bragg at all? I know it. No, and that's why we live here. But the leech, I learned that the leech will attach itself and suck the blood right out, make a big old, you know, hickey on you, to take the blood out of you three times its own weight. How does it do that? And my question is, you know, why does it do that? But obviously, he is not speaking of a leech itself. He's speaking of people that behave this way. And there are people that will just suck the life out of you. Those who are always there, taking and taking and taking. As I said, the leech has two daughters, give and give. That's what, you know, that's all they say all the time. Give, 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 give. You give to me. You give to me. What's going on here? How come somebody didn't give to me today? Give to me. Give to me. And so they just take and take and take and take and are never satisfied. As you read on, he goes to, so there are three things that are never satisfied. Four never say enough. Now, this is a literary style that Hebrew poetry to make a point. You just build upon it and build upon it and build upon it. And so you say there's two things, three things, even four things. You know, it's just, you know, to make it bigger and bigger. That's all. And so talk about the person who is a leech. He is like the grave. Obviously, grave is never full. People just continue to die, and the grave never says, okay, that's enough. That's enough. We won't have any more people dying now. And so the grave is something like a leech. Or should I say the person who is just the one who's just taking, and still never satisfied, that person is like a grave. You know, it's just, and not only that, just full of death there. By the way, does anybody know anybody like that? I know we could all, my Aunt Tilly, man, she's just like that. You know, it's just so funny. Everybody knows somebody like that who is always, always on you, making it your responsibility to take care of them. And no matter what you do, you could give them the entire world. You could give them everything, and they'll just say, well, I just don't know. I just don't like the way he gave me the whole world, you know? And it just always, and so anyway, the other thing here, it's like a barren womb. Now, the Hebrews, the barren womb was just the worst thing for a woman. A woman who was barren, as we remember from Genesis, remember Sarah? She didn't have any babies, and she really had a hard time with that. And then Hannah, there in 1 Samuel, she didn't have any babies. And she was, I mean, this was a horrible thing for a woman to not be able to have babies. And so the barren womb is never satisfied. It's like, I can't be satisfied with my life without anything. And it was just, it was a very bad thing for a woman to not have babies. And also a leech is like the earth that is not satisfied with water. This is very interesting because the fact is you can water your lawn all day long. And if you stop watering your lawn, then your lawn's going to die. But you can get it to live for a little bit. But then you just say, okay, you've had enough water. But you have to keep giving the earth water in order to grow anything. And so the earth is not satisfied with water. And also the fire never says enough, and so a fire consumes everything that goes into it. And the more you put into a fire, the bigger it gets and consumes even more. And such is the case with those who are the people who just suck the life right out of you, who suck the blood right out of you, you know. I guess it's so sad because such people, they're just not satisfied. I think about the Ecclesiastes chapter 5, Solomon says, he who loves silver is not satisfied with silver. You know, if you're just so bent on like one thing and just getting it, you're just never going to be satisfied no matter how much you get. And such is the case also with covetousness. Did you know if you were satisfied, you wouldn't covet? And so... You know, we can, each one of us, no matter if we believe, maybe even rightly, you know, well, I'm not a leech. I know that. I can be needy at times, but I'm no leech. But we can take on the leech behavior if all we're doing is coveting. I've got to have this. I've got to have that. I've got to have that. I wish I had. Why does he get to have that? No, I don't get to have that. You know, and there it is. And God has given you so much, but it's just not enough. So careful of the leech behavior. Verse 17, the eye that mocks his father and scorns obedience to his mother, the ravens of the valley will pick it out and the young eagles will eat it. All right. Any kids in here? Teenagers? Kids? Hi, guys. How you doing? Do you like your eyes? You know, let me tell you something. I learned something. I think I've shared this with you before, but now I got to share it because it's right here. You look at this and say, "Well, you know, that's kind of weird. Is that true? I mean, come on. I mean, obviously, this is some poetic, you know, lofty stuff. That obviously, there's no raven that's going to come and pick your eye out if you're just a creep to your mom. You know what I mean? You know, I've seen a lot of people that are creeps to their mothers, and they don't get their eyes plucked out." And so you say, well, this can't be right. Well, the picture here is the fact that when I learned this from a dead deer in my front yard once. You know, I walked out in the front yard, and there was a you know, baby deer that had been hit by a car and just kind of made its way up onto our lawn. And And it hadn't been there that long, but it didn't have no eyes. Because the ravens come and they'll take the eyes first. And you know, I guess, I don't know, they're easy to get to. But that's the part they go for first. And there must be yummy or something. But the picture here is that if you mock your father, if you scorn obedience to your mother, what's going to happen is you're going to bring on death to yourself. And but it's not even that. I consider that, you know, when we die, you know, you get a proper burial, and hopefully we can bury you before the ravens get to your eyes, right? But this is speaking of a dishonorable death. You know, I think about the kings, many of the kings that did not obey the Lord but rebelled and they led the country into idolatry. They didn't get buried with the kings. They were not given an honorable burial. And so, you know, the picture is here is that the kid will die to nobody's sorrow and will be left there for the ravens to take the eyes first. And so that's a tough thing, I think, for teenagers to read that. They just don't believe it. But I've seen people grow up to be so rebellious and their lives, they have nothing. They have nothing. But it all began with just saying, nope, Mom, I don't agree with you. I don't care what you say. And Dad, I'm not going to listen to anything you say. And so it's so sad we live in a day and age, too, where we're taught to listen to our kids, and the kids are not taught to listen to their parents. Very scary days we live in. You know, your kids can really teach you something. I still can't figure out how that works, but every once in a while they teach me that I should have been a little harder on them about that, you know. But I think that's what I really learned from my kids. Okay, verse 18. Now he goes back to this pattern. There are three things which are too wonderful for me. Yes, four which I do not understand. The way of an eagle in the air, the way of a serpent on a rock, the way of a ship in the midst of the sea, and the way of a man with a virgin. Now in the Old King James, it says the way of a man with a maid. If you look in the Hebrew, what you have here is a word that means a young lady, which could be a virgin or it could just be a young lady. The emphasis is not on virginity, but as far as the Hebrews are concerned, it would be expected of a young lady. So it would be a virgin. And so this last line here is obviously speaking romantically, you know, of a man with a young lady, which I don't like, by the way. I was talking to my wife about this. We don't like the Old King James here, the way of a man with a maid, you know. I don't know. I always think about the maid, you know, with the apron on and the, you know, I just, you know, the feather duster in her hand, you know. I can't understand why that guy's, you know, whoa, I can't look at him with that maid. Look at how that is. Or the other thing that, you know, Abraham with Hagar. Hagar was the maid, you know. Like, ooh, that's wrong too. So the real word for us in this day and age would be translated a young lady. And it, again, it speaks romantically. But so what is the point of all of this? You know, I think that as Agur's looking on all of these things, what do these things all have in common? Well, obviously, he tells you what they have in common. They're too wonderful. He can't even understand them. And I think he marvels over these things. And one of the things that all of these have in common is that there's no instructions on how to do these things. But, you know, and they're conquering things that are very difficult to understand, you know. And so it is a marvel to watch an eagle just in the air with its wings just glides out there. And he has no compass. He has nothing. He's just kind of going by instinct. And I think about, how a snake can just grab that rock all the way around while it makes its way around. I don't know if you can do that. I cannot. And of course, the a ship, you know, again, with no map, not knowing, it goes. Maybe he's just looking at these things. It's just, these are very natural things that take place. I have weird thoughts, and one of my weird thoughts, and it's been this way for at least 20 years, is I don't want to get too tacky on you, but I think of Adam and Eve in the garden. And it says, and Adam knew his wife. How did he know? How did they know what to do and how to do that? You know, I think that the Lord put something just instinctive in Adam and Eve. And so when you just see how men and women are all over the world, and it's just, you know, you just, wow, I don't know how they figure it out. And quite frankly, I don't think any man has really figured out a woman yet, or the other way around, you know. But anyway. Verse 20, this is the way of an adulterous woman. She eats and wipes her mouth and says, I have done no wickedness. So Paul talks about this, having their hearts seared, having their conscience seared as with a hot iron. Your conscience tells you, you know, I shouldn't have done that, or, oh, I shouldn't do that. Your conscience just says, you know, we all know, even the most godless people in this world have a sense of wrong and right. But there are some who, as their consciences have been seared, they can't feel anything anymore. And I think we've all known people in adulterous relationships that, you know, and I love the picture here. I mean, love, maybe that's not the right word, but the picture is so clear of a person who's just going about their business. Somebody just eating, going to dinner, wipe the mouth, said, hey, what are you doing? You're not supposed to be with it. Says, I haven't done anything wrong. And I've counseled too many people with that same kind of attitude. Adulterous people don't care what it's doing to anybody else. They're only thinking to themselves. And when we start thinking only of ourselves, that what happens is everybody else is going to get crushed, and we're going to get slowly crushed too. And somehow, some way, somebody points out our sins, and we say, nope, I still haven't done anything wrong. No, I'm good. You know how sad it was back in Genesis when Joseph's brothers, they're all envious of him because he got the cool jacket and his dad likes him best. They threw him in a well, going to leave him for dead, and they said, maybe we shouldn't do that. Let's sell him to these Ishmaelites coming by, and we'll sell him as a slave. And they sold him to the Ishmaelites, and they took him to Egypt. And it reads in Genesis that the brothers then sat down to have a meal. Man, the calloused heart that can just do something so wicked and then just sit down and have a sandwich like nothing ever happened. Don't expect, and maybe I'm talking to myself, but you guys can listen as I talk to myself. Don't expect everybody to know that they're sinning when you point out the sin. Don't expect it. Verse 21, for three things the earth is perturbed. What does that say in the Old King James, perturbed? It's verse 21. What does it say? Disquieted. Yeah, I remember I that's something I would never say. Oh, I'm just getting disquieted. I'm so disquieted. perturbed, that's a good word. Irritated, annoyed. What does it say? Quakes. Oh, that's interesting. The earth quakes. Now, the meaning there is that of being annoyed, being bothered. The earth is bothered. Yes, for it cannot bear up. It's like, can't even take this. For a servant when he reigns, a fool when he is filled with food, a hateful woman when she is married, and a maidservant who succeeds her mistress. The earth is perturbed. I'll tell you what, not only is the earth perturbed, but everybody that knows all these people are perturbed. Now, a servant when he reigns, maybe you can tell me later if you've got something. I was just racking the little concordance in my brain, going through the scriptures, thinking of a servant who grew to be a ruler. Now, some actually did very well. For instance, Joseph, right? The one who was sold into slavery. He was a slave, and then he came to be second in charge of all of Egypt, and he did everything correctly. But I think what is being spoken of here is definitely not a success in this, but rather, I think the best illustration would be like when I was in the Navy and we were in Navy boot camp. All us guys who were in boot camp, we were just boots. We were the low life. We were the scum of the Navy, and we had these guys called company commanders who were in charge, and they would tell us what to do, and they'd tell us where to go, and they'd tell us how to do it, and they'd find any way to mess with our minds so that we would fail. You know, I mean, for instance, they'd say, guys, okay, after you're done cleaning this, then at 1300 hours, you can have a cigarette break. And so it was, 1 o'clock showed up and everybody runs outside and they start smoking on their cigarettes. Now, I wasn't a smoker at the time, so I didn't get in trouble. But company commander comes out and he looks at everybody and he says, I didn't say you could light them. You know, so these are the things, that they would do, right? And those of you who are in the military, you know, and so what would happen is so many of these boots would say, well, one day I'm going to be a company commander. I'm going to be one of those guys. I'm going to be in charge one of these days. And when I do, you see, when you take the mind of one who is being pushed around and he says, I'm going to be in charge one day. And if he ever gets the opportunity to be in charge, I will tell you, more so than not, that person will be the worst tyrant of all. Because it's like, you know, their comeuppance, I'm gonna get back for everything that was done to me as a servant. And so they become worse. So we don't like when somebody is in that position. Or a fool when he is filled with food. I think about 1 Kings, I think it's chapter 25. I don't know if that's right. A guy by the name of Nabal, who, that's what his name means, fool. His wife's name was Abigail. And he didn't want to let David come through and didn't want to let David and his men have any of his stuff. And so Nabal gets filled with food. He's just filling himself with all of his stuff. He was very rich. And you know, it just did nothing for him. It was just, it's like a shame almost. Sometimes you see someone he's just a creep. But here he is just enjoying life, getting all the stuff that he, you know, wants. It's just horribly irritating. But before we stay there, remember Psalm 73, all right? Psalm 73 has Asaph talking about those who are the creeps of the world, who seem to be full, who get everything they want. It's like, how come they don't have anything wrong with them? And look at me, I'm falling apart. I'm sick, I'm poor, I don't got nothing, and I'm supposed to be a child of God. And look at these people over here, and they don't even care about God, and everything goes great for them. Ooh. The earth is perturbed. I'm perturbed. And then Asaph says, but then I went into the sanctuary, and I knew their end. You know, it is irritating to see the world and the wicked people of this world just having their way, having their time. But the world doesn't like it, we don't like it, understand their end. And we should be feeling sorry for them way before we get irritated with them. We should be feeling sorry for them. Here's something else that can't bear up, for the earth is perturbed. a hateful woman when she is married. Or a hated woman when she is married. I don't know, I think the word is hateful there. I guess they have a hard time deciding what that Hebrew word is. But to me, it makes more sense as the hateful woman. As you see throughout the Proverbs, those, you know, it's better to dwell in the corner of the rooftop than with a contentious woman, right? Right? Okay, then. And if that doesn't work, it's better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious woman. Right, right. You talk about a hateful woman, I think that Ahab had the best one of those, right? His wife's name was Jezebel. She was a very hateful woman. She was murderous, and she'd find ways to murder. And then when Ahab didn't get his way and he'd sit in a corner and sulk, she would find ways to get him what he wanted by murdering people. And I will tell you, such a woman, the earth is perturbed. People are perturbed. And a maidservant who succeeds her mistress. It was the saddest stuff taking place in Genesis 16 when Abram and Sarai, before they were Abraham and Sarah, they weren't getting God's promise, so they decided we're going to make God's promise. And here's Hagar, which actually means stranger. Here is Hagar. We're going to make God's promise happen through her. And so Sarai said to Abram, here, you sleep with her and then we'll make a baby that way. And we'll pretend it's my baby, Sarai would say. And it all sounded like a good idea to them. Now we read it and we go, oh my goodness, this is horrible. But this is just something that, you know, the people did in those days. You know, if you couldn't have a baby, then, you know, the maid would step in. And the maid couldn't have any right to that baby, though, because the maid was a servant of the house. And so Hagar got pregnant, and out popped Ishmael. And then Sarai can't figure her out, you know. It was her idea. And she says, oh, get rid of this woman. She's just, oh, she's making fun of me. She's mocking me. And certainly Hagar was. Because Hagar suddenly knew she had the power. But the thing is, and the problem was, that Sarai gave her that power. And so often, you know, well, by the way, and then Hagar would, she just ruined everything, actually. She ruined everything for herself. She ruined everything for Abram, everything for Sarai, ruined everything for Iran. But it all happened by taking someone from the place that God had put them and putting her in a higher place. And what happened was that she ended up succeeding her mistress. Now, and after all the fights, and then finally Hagar goes away, then Sarah finally gets what God had intended, but not without a lot of pain. And so, I'll tell you, the earth was perturbed during Genesis 16. All right, more stuff. There are four things which are little on the earth, but they are exceedingly wise. All right, listen up, people. This is where we learn. The ants are a people not strong, yet they prepare their food in the summer. I don't know if you've ever looked at an ant closely. Look at the size of the ant's head. Look, if you consider the brain inside of the head of an ant, it would have to be smaller than the head, which would make the brain of an ant no larger than not the head of a pin, but the point of a pin. And so here are the ants doing what? Preparing for the summer. I mean, preparing for the winter. Excuse me. During the summer, they're always working. Watch the ants. Watch them go. They're working. And what do? We sit on the couch. You're putting another show. And then everything falls apart for us. We go, oh, man, we need money. We need this. Well, what were you doing 2 months ago? You could have been working. And here's God's word. Here's God telling us through his word. Do you guys realize that ants are smarter than you? Here we are with our big old brains. And we think we're so smart. We know all the big words. And we're smarter than this guy and that guy and all of that. But the ants are still smarter than us. And that we could look at the ants as God made all these animals to instinctively do these things. He's just showing us that we can actually look at nature and know how things ought to be. And so the ants are, the whole point here, the ants are not lazy. They don't make excuse. They just do what they do. And so they have food in the winter. That's pretty cool. And they got little teeny tiny brains. The rock badgers are feeble folk. Some of you say hyrax. Some of you say conies, like a, you know, Coney Island or something. Feeble folk, yet they make their homes in crags. The coney is like a some kind of a rabbit of sorts. Rock badger, I don't know where they got that idea. So I'm not sure exactly what kind of an animal it is, but it is. It's a small rabbit or a large rodent of some sort. But the point being is that they make their homes in crags. And I read something just recently from Charles Spurgeon that just was so sweet on this, so awesome. And what a lesson for you and me, and the fact that this helpless tiny creature can be safe in the most dreadful storm if he just sneaks himself into the cracks of the rocks and he's in there and nothing can get to him. And the fact is that you and I have the rock that is Jesus Christ, and we are weak. We're weaker than we think. Well, I'll tell you what, we are stronger than the bunny, right? Than the coney. We're stronger than that. And our brains are even bigger than that, but it knows to hide in that crevice in the rock when you and I, still on our own strength, refuse to even get in there and to hide ourselves in that rock. And so in all of the coney's weakness, it has the strength of the rocks that it is hiding in. As in all of your weakness, we have the strength of Jesus Christ if we hide in him and we seek him as our hiding place. The locusts have no king, yet they advance in ranks. Locusts have no king. Did you know? They don't have, it's like the bees. Even the bees have a queen bee, and they all kind of gather around her and take care of her. And stuff. But locusts, those dirty, rotten things, locusts, they come to my house every now and then, by the way. Locusts do. They come and they raid my refrigerator. They're the kids that live next door. They come in like locusts, and then I go, you're like, whoa, no, and they're all over the refrigerator. And They come in and just destroy entire crops, locusts do. They're just grasshoppers is what they are. But they come in swarms and they come together. They do this in a big mob. One locust, I mean, come on, you know, just like that, and he's done. But they come so many together, and nobody's leading them. They're just together. What? Oh yeah. Check out the size of the brain of the locust. All right. And they keep ranks. I think it was in 1 Chronicles chapter 12, listing all of the soldiers of Zebulun. It describes these soldiers as those who could keep ranks. How important in war to keep ranks. As soon as one guy just takes off and starts to go out on his own, not only is he a sitting duck, but it also uncovers the behind of your comrade. We must be those who keep ranks within the church. We must be those who stay together as the locusts do. And we even have a king. His name is Jesus Christ. We have the Lord Jesus Christ, our King, the King of Kings, Lord of Lords. And what do we do? Well, I don't want to really be around the church. I don't have to do that to be saved. I don't really want to remember what it says in Proverbs 18:1, that he who isolates himself seeks his own desire and rages against all wise judgment. And so, look at the locusts. And you know what? You don't want to know something about locusts? They never go hungry, do they? The locust that gets off on his own, he's just a target. How come we don't know that? How come we don't receive that? But I tell you that, you look at all these Sunday night people. You know, sometimes you read these things and you think, well, this isn't for anybody sitting here. This is for all those that just don't want to come, don't want to be here. Although sometimes, let it be a warning to us who are here. Sometimes we don't want to be around, do we? We don't. Sometimes we just want to isolate ourselves. And I understand that. But take a look at the locusts and their teeny tiny brains and how much they know. What about the spider? The spider skillfully grasps with its hands, and it is in king's palaces. Some suggest that this could also mean lizard. I'm guessing that the Hebrew word for spider and lizard is the same, but actually it comes from a word which means poisonous. And so I would think that this would definitely be a spider before it would be a lizard. You don't find a lot of poisonous lizards. But the spider skillfully grasps with its hands, and it's in king's palaces. Well, what does that have to do with the price of beef anywhere? Well, I think about Proverbs chapter 22, verse 29. It says, he who excels in his work will stand before kings. He will not stand before unknown men. I think, what does a spider do? He skillfully grasps with his hands. I mean, look at the webs that a spider makes, right? But he's still just a scurvy little spider. And he makes these webs, and he comes around, and he waits to suck the life out of flies, right? But where do you find spiders? Everywhere. And you find them even in the greatest places. Because they spend that time working their hands, making their webs in the corners of palaces. And we have been given abilities in our lives. Every one of us has an ability, has a physical gift, let alone the spiritual gifts. You all have spiritual gifts. We have spiritual gifts. We have physical gifts. They're all from God. And if we work them, we can be in better places than we are. But so often, you know, there's a spider working his web, working his web, working his web. We say, well, you know, I ought to be in king's places, and I'm just going to sit here until the king calls. Even the largest spider has a pretty small brain, but it knows what to do. So we can learn so much from nature just watching insects. And there we are. Topi, topi, do. We're something. There are three, this is verse 29, now some more stuff. There are three things which are majestic in pace. Yes, four which are stately in walk. So these are things that, proud, but I'm not looking at this pride here as a bad thing. This is something that somebody who's very secure, should I say that way. A lion, which is mighty among beasts, right? Doesn't turn away from any. Well, you understand that we have, again, we have the power of the Lord with us. We have the lion of the tribe of Judah. And so if he doesn't turn away from any, we don't need to be afraid of anything. And so we can stand firm. Now look at these things. Don't ask me to make application here. I just can't. I'm not even going to pretend. Verse 31, a greyhound or a rooster, right? I don't know if it says that is your translation has rooster or greyhound. Yeah, I've always thought greyhounds and roosters look the same. But it's another problem with the translation. And I would think that I would lean more toward rooster just personally, because roosters kind of just do that. You know, get me a chicken. You know, they are the boss of the hen house, you know. And so a male goat also. Don't mess with a male goat. Have you ever been butted by a goat? That's pretty funny. They were just little things, but I couldn't believe it. We went and stopped at a petting zoo somewhere. Remember, Bridget? We were driving somewhere in the middle of nowhere. And it was just some on some just deserted road somewhere. Suddenly it says petting zoo ahead. And there it was. And they had all these little farm animals in there. You could go in there and put a quarter in the thing and get your stuff out. And I got my stuff. And we went over to that thing, and they attack you. They say, food, you know, and they're running at you. And I'm getting the stuff, and I'm not kidding you. I got butted right in the, you know, it was, I mean, that's why they call it that. And I go, whoa, it was really funny. I thought, whoa, these guys. But they're in control. The male goat is the one who's in control. He's the one, that, you know, I'm in control here. And so. But again, making application to us, I'm not sure, you know, whether we be greyhounds, roosters, or goats. And a king whose troops are with him. I do like that, and I think that, or as it reads here on my margin, a Jewish tradition is a king against whom there is no uprising. And that there is a security, knowing that, that those who are in authority, whatever authority you may have, when those that you are in authority over are with you, you know, that is it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. But for those who are leading, I would say, don't blame those people if they're not with you, because sometimes they're not with you because you're just going somewhere weird. And so. So consider you who are in authority of any type, that to just make sure that you are leading God's way, and that as Jesus would tell the disciples, you know, the rulers of the Gentiles, they lord it over them, they push them around, but you will serve by example, you will lead by example, and you will serve. And if a king is willing, or someone who is in authority is willing to serve those that he's in authority over, then they are going to be with him, and there's going to be great security there. And so that's a lesson for me to serve y'all, and that's hard for me because I'm about as self-centered as any of you, maybe worse. But verse 32: if you have been foolish in exalting yourself, or if you have devised evil, put your hand on your mouth. Okay, now we're going to finish this up, but the whole idea is just to say, just stop right there. Just do whatever you can to just shut yourself up. Well, I'm wonderful, you know. No, I'm not bragging, because I'm just stating facts. I'm wonderful, and I'm humble, and I'm proud of my humility, and I'm probably one of the most humble guys I've ever known. Probably the most humble. And so you start talking like that, and God says, you know what? Just stick a sock in your mouth now. Just, stop. For as the churning of milk produces butter, and the wringing the nose produces blood. What kind of graphic stuff is this? So the forcing of wrath produces strife. The wringing of the nose produces blood. You know, that's just, like, I mean, just, oh, could you have said anything else there, please? But it's just giving a couple of certainties here. You keep churning the milk, it's not going to be milk anymore. And you keep wringing the nose, some stuff's going to be coming out of it. And so is the case. The forcing of wrath produces strife. Strife is just difficulty in life, you know that. But it's hard for me to understand, so the forcing of wrath produces strife. Look up the Hebrew. Whenever you have a hard time understanding something, if you go back into the original language, you go, oh, I'm starting to understand this a little bit better. Because the word literally for wrath is nose or nostril. And you say, well, Kevin, that makes it more difficult. So the forcing of the nostril produces strife. Keep reading the definition, and you're going to find that it's not the the forcing of the nose, but it speaks of the snorting and the breathing and the pushing of the air in due to being irritated or just like a you know, like a buffalo or a bull, you know. And what they do this to assert themselves. You know, they're placing them, they're shoving themselves out there and say, hey, I'm in charge here. You know, I'm in charge. I'm in charge. And God, through his word, is telling us, if you keep trying to assert yourself and your position, what you think your position may be, guaranteed it's going to produce nothing but strife. You keep, you know, exalting yourself. You know why we do that, right? You know why we exalt ourselves. Because no one else will. You know, we talk good of ourselves because we're afraid nobody else will talk good of us. And we just like to hear good about ourselves. I want to hear good about me all the time. That's all I want to hear. And if I'm not hearing it, I'll say it. Hey, Bridget, I'm good. And she says, yeah, you are. You want a sandwich? No, I'm good. I'm good. You're good. Okay, you're good. What do you want for lunch? I know, but I'm good. And I might as well just take it what it says in the word. I just might as well just wring my nose, making blood come out. Might as well make some butter, because all I'm doing is creating more trouble the more I want to talk about my goodness. So why don't we spend our time talking about others' goodness? And speaking of humility, and that's just to have no thought of ourselves at all. You know, not to think bad of yourself, but just to have no thought at all.